In the wayward stars of the eastern fringes of our galaxy, we will find a unified consortium of worlds, populated by a diverse array of Xenos species who have all committed themselves to an ideology which best serves their interests. This technocratic and rather equitable civilization would be the young Tau Empire. Every citizen who lives under its fold has accepted and integrated within themselves the teachings of the greater good. This is a philosophical view which inscribes the idea that each individual who lives within the empire has an essential role to play, and that the benefits of the many should always be placed above the benefits of the few. For one to best serve their society, they must put aside their own individualistic ambitions and instead choose to turn the wheel of progress solely to uplift and stimulate the growth and well-being of their peers. In addition, perhaps with the exception of some of the more senior of ethereals, no individual would ever be considered as being more important than any of their contemporaries, and so the standards of living across the Tau worlds will be kept as fair and equal as possible. In order to best exemplify the teachings of the greater good, their society has been organized around a caste system, where the Tau will be born into one of five distinct castes, and they will then formulate their lives around the expectations of someone within their social order. The five castes each serve a vital and specific role, which has been ordained as being of the utmost importance to the betterment of the Tau Empire. I shall go into more detail soon, but the five classes would be the warriors of the fire caste, the builders of the earth caste, the pilots of the air caste, the diplomats of the water caste, and the leaders of the ethereal caste. When a Tau is born, they will be assigned to their class based upon that of their parents, and they will remain within their societal station until their death. That is not to say that there is not room for growth, however. A fire warrior can ascend to becoming the greatest of commanders throughout the long years of their life. However, they will never be permitted to practice their skills in construction or diplomacy, since that would fall under the purview of their cousin castes. In addition, the ethereals strongly forbid any form of interbreeding between the members of different classes, and the Tau are placed under a tremendous deal of pressure to remain dedicated to the fellow cadre of their class. If an individual was found to be seeking out a partner from another caste, or if they were aspiring towards certain goals which were not applicable to their role, then in all likelihoods they would be shunned and withdrawn from society in order to undertake a rigorous re-indoctrination period, all for going against the teachings of the greater good. The caste system was originally based off of the divisions found between the ancient tribes of the Tau home world. During their past history, there was a period of intense civil war and strife known in the Tau lexicon as the Manteau, translated as Death Age in Gothic. The long-standing divisions between the tribes had resulted in several distinct groups appearing, each of which displayed unique traits, such as with one tribe being significantly stronger than another, or one which had a limited ability to glide through the air on fledgling wings. In any case, the differences amongst the Tau were not celebrated, and it led to a series of large-scale wars between the tribal groups, leading to the deaths of thousands. It was during this period of strife that the ethereals first emerged. The mysterious and oddly calming Tau managed to broker a peace agreement between the various factions, and once the world was united in their purpose, they implemented the caste system. In creating this framework, they preached the importance of the greater good as their guiding philosophy and implored the Tau to consider how their individual roles could be best used to serve society. They also pledged the importance of maintaining harmony between the various groups and how with every action they could help to propel one another into the stars. Across each of the castes, there is a conserved ranking system, which will be used to signify one's social standing and status amongst their kin. So, for example, the suffix of La will be used for those of the lowest ranking throughout the caste. And so a fire caste initiate would be named as Shasla, and an earth caste worker would be named similarly as Fiola. The remaining structure reads as follows. Initiate members who are still children and have not been inducted fully to a caste are known as Sal. The first rank, as mentioned, is La, then We. The next is Vrei, then the second highest is El. And finally, the highest possible rank is O. I should note that the members of each caste, whilst all Tao, are perhaps not as similar towards each other as we may believe. The myriad of physiological differences between each of the castes is so striking that we could almost view them as belonging to separate subspecies. It is likely that thanks to the decree of the Ethereals that the Tao should not intermarry between castes, that the specific traits and genetic features have been incredibly well conserved throughout the history of their people. We must acknowledge, however, that these spiritual leaders see the caste system as being paramount to the success of their empire. And so they have happily orchestrated this civilization-spanning eugenics program, whilst giving no alternative to those who would reject it. There have also been hushed whispers and rumors regarding the Ethereals, suggesting that they may have pursued some methods for artificially enhancing certain traits within the castes, all to make them more effective at their ordained work. Whilst, yes, the Ethereals clearly seek nothing but the furtherment and expansion of their empire, there is little evidence regarding genetic manipulation as having occurred within their borders. The Tao are clear masters of material engineering, with many of their creations being true masterworks, but we are yet to see any confirmation that they have become proficient in the fine art of genomic tuning. The first caste to mention is the fire caste, known to the Tao as Shas. These are the warriors of the Tao Empire, who make up the bulk of their ground forces and who pilot the mighty battle suits which have become nigh synonymous with Tao warfare. Its members have been selectively interbred with each other since the old tribal days to produce offspring who are incredibly strong and aggressive, at least by Tao standards. They also carry a greater level of muscle mass upon their dense frames. And it has been noted that they also display a much fiercer temperament when compared to those of the other castes. In the ancient days of the Tao home world, their ancestors acted as the hunters and warriors of the burgeoning species. They found their homes out in the rough grassy plains, entrenching their genome with the first traits of strength and endurance which have lasted to this day. The fire caste is guided by a doctrine known as the Code of Fire. This ancient rule set has been passed down as a sacred tradition from their past days, and it can be seen as a system of honor which teaches the fire caste members on how best to act in order to bring glory to their people. The system is to be followed for the members' entire life, where it will guide them on what actions to take in order to forge them into a cohesive, elite military force. The four main points of this code are to bring honor to yourself and your people, to be obedient to the fire caste and the Tao Empire, to fulfill your duties to your kin and your society, and to follow in a path of self-sacrifice, all for the greater good. The members of the fire caste will spend their entire lives preparing for or partaking in warfare. From the time where they can first walk, they will be initiated into military training camps. The young child will undergo years of brutal physical training, all to strengthen them up into becoming true and powerful fire warriors. At an early age, they will also begin their combat simulation trainings. During this process, they will experience thousands of distinct combat and survival scenarios, honing their reflexes and psyche into that of a deadly and efficient warrior. Once an initiate has endured this training, they will advance from underling to fire warrior, and they will be permitted to don their battle gear before being sent out into the stars, ready to give their lives to whatever cause the ethereals have divined as being of the utmost importance to the greater good. As a fire warrior gains more experience, they will eventually earn the right to pilot a battle suit, allowing them to further enhance their potent combat abilities thanks to its highly mobile frame and devastating arsenal of weapons. In order to progress through the ranks, a member of the fire caste must undergo a trial by fire. These are rituals in which a Tau will be subjected to a horrific simulation, which provides them with an opportunity to best showcase their leadership abilities. Unfortunately, however, the more senior commanders must be sure that their subordinates express these qualities naturally and innately, rather than simply putting on a show for the trial. As such, in order to ensure that their actions are genuine, the simulation will often be performed in such a way that the incumbent Tau has no idea that they are in an artificial scenario. These trials can range from witnessing an orc mob charging towards an undefended settlement, or from spying a group of assassins taking aim at the ruling ethereal. Whatever the scenario, the actions which the individual takes during the simulation will be reviewed by more senior Firecast members, and if they deem the response to have been noble, true, and within the guiding principles of the Firecast, then they will be promoted to their next rank. A promotion can bring many benefits and privileges, such as being able to pilot more advanced battlesuits, or even taking command of entire cadres. It is an ever-present dream for a member of the Fire Caste to climb up the ranks and to have their name be remembered alongside the legends of Tau history. Next, we have the Air Caste, known to the Tau as Kor. The duty of these Tau is to pilot the ships and aircraft of both the military and civilian wings of their empire. These caste members differ greatly from their compatriots, as they will universally live off-world, being stationed in floating orbital cities. This has resulted in them taking on the nickname of the Invisible Caste, as the vast majority of Air Caste members will never set foot upon a planet's surface, meaning that most of their fellow Tau will never lay eyes upon them, instead seeing only their aircraft flying high above them. Physically, they are also incredibly distinct from any other caste. Its members are the tallest of any Tau, where they will carry a long, slender frame supported by hollow, bird-like bones. This is partly due to the low and sometimes zero gravity conditions afforded to them in their orbital habitats, which has reduced both their muscle mass as well as their bone density. Some of you may find it rather sad, but many of the Air Caste members will be so adapted to life within a starship that they will never be able to walk upon a planet's surface again. Their lithe frames would quickly succumb to damage if they attempted to fight against the constant pressures of a high-gravity environment. But thankfully, they tend to prefer a life in high orbit over anything else. In the distant past, their ancestors still harbored some of these traits. However, they also possessed a strong, membranous, wing-like appendage, which stretched out from their distal limbs to connect to their torsos. This allowed them to fly for short distances, making them into adept messengers and scouts who could glide across a planet by following along with the strong air currents, ready to deliver orders and instructions to the distant Tau tribes. The members of the Air Caste are held in rather high regard across the galaxy, in part due to their innately quick reflexes, which have enabled them to be incredibly proficient when piloting the advanced fighter craft of the Tau Empire. They can rapidly adapt to the changing tides of an aerial dogfight banking and diving to outperform even the most veteran of pilots from other species. This is only enhanced by the cutting-edge technologies of their aircraft, as well as from their superb helmets, which provide a constant stream of analytical data to the pilot, who must interpret and act upon even the smallest of changes in wind speed or air pressure to best control their fighter craft. Though their frames are rather weak, they have an unmatched ability to withstand and resist the incredibly high levels of G-forces which they encounter during their flights. Thanks to this, the pilots can take tremendously daring and risky maneuvers during their missions, which would likely send even a veteran pilot of a lesser species into the void of unconsciousness. Culturally, they see their ships and aircrafts as somewhat of an extension of themselves, and they utilize them to fully express their desires of independence from the restrictions of land-based life. It also allows them to display their freedom as they careen through the clouds until they finally break through into the stratosphere, putting the entire galaxy within their reach. The next is the Earth caste, known as the Fio to the Tau. They are tasked with taking on many of the more physically laborious of tasks across their worlds, and so they will find work as the builders, engineers, and artisans of the Empire. There is no limit to what an Earth caste foundry can produce, where anything from but a humble chair to the mightiest of battle suits can be quickly constructed and shipped out to where it is needed. This caste also encompasses the Tau scientists and technicians, who work on discovering and producing new technologies to propel the Tau Empire into new heights of advancement. The original members of this caste were the first of the Tau to have mastered agriculture and to have constructed great cities, giving the entire species a permanent place to call home, rather than moving as groups of nomadic tribes. They are the shortest of all Tau, standing rather squat. However, they are nearly as muscular as those of the Fire caste, likely so that they can handle the hard labors of construction, even if it is always supported by cadres of drones to assist them. The majority of Tau are born into this caste, making it the largest in terms of its members. But this makes a great deal of sense, for how could a species grow into a star-spanning empire without the combined might of tens of millions of workers constructing its foundations? Their place within society and the general labors which they perform has given most members of this caste a rather stoic and straightforward mindset, where they will be content to work the agri-drone fields or oversee the polymer forges for the good of the Empire. Similarly, many of them may be described as seeming rather simple or dour when compared to members of the other castes. However, this does not dissuade them from carrying out their work, as even a humble life of hard labor can bring them great pride for supporting their kin. It may be worth mentioning that this attitude has likely been reinforced by the constant and rapid expansion of the Tau Empire over the preceding millennia. From their early expansion sphere programs, they have colonized and conquered dozens of worlds, which each proved to require a monumental undertaking of civil and military engineering projects to complete. As such, the somber workers of the Earth caste have been in a near constant state of labor, perpetually toiling away on distant worlds, all to uplift them towards the near idyllic standards of the Tau. As a side effect of this, however, is that the Earth caste members are typically rather blunt with their speech. The pragmatic laborers take on life with an imperturbable attitude, where they are unmoved by the emotional challenges of their existence. This is not to say that the Earth caste are not forward-thinking, or that they are not made up of erudite members, for we must remember that all of the technological marvels of the Tau Empire were formulated in Earth caste laboratories and research facilities. For example, the mighty Riptide battlesuit is known to all as a true wonder of both science and engineering, being constructed as a massive jet-pack-equipped suit powered by an experimental Nova reactor, which outclasses almost all Imperial power reactors in both its output and efficiency. It has proven to be the bane of the Tau's enemies, and it stands as a true testament to the novel creativity, scientific aptitude, and material engineering prowess of the Earth caste. The fourth group is the water caste, or poor, to the Tau. These members act within any of the societal roles which require some degree of communicative ability. As such, they will serve as bureaucratic administrators, ambassadors, traders, merchants, or as diplomats. Any relations or interactions with other species will be done through water caste diplomats, who will ascertain as to whether or not its members can be swayed into joining the fold of the Tau Empire, or if the fire caste should be deployed to wipe them out and eliminate them as a potential threat. They are named as the water caste, since they are to be seen as water, flowing through the other castes or species and harmonizing all under their honeyed words. Rather distinctly from the other Tau, water caste members are primarily identifiable based on their extremely emotive faces, often softening alien diplomats with their warm smiles and soft gazes. They have been known to pick up and emulate the subtlest of facial movements of others, mirroring their emotions and phonetic patterns, making even the most hostile of diplomats feel at ease. Some would call this manipulative, but to the water caste, it is simply a tactic to further the goals and aspirations of the Tau Empire. Its members are also innately skilled in the art of linguistics, being able to quickly pick up new languages with a near supernatural ability. This is partly due to their long history and extensive experience in doing so, but it is also aided by the advanced technological tools of the Tau, which can help them in deciphering a newly encountered vocabulary. In any case, their skills will enable a Tau diplomat to swiftly integrate themselves in an alien society, where they will charm the local lords before spinning a graceful story of the boons to be afforded to them by the adherents of the greater good. Its members will also undergo prolonged yet worthwhile training programs to teach them of the communicative intricacies required for the critical diplomatic missions which they will be sent on. This can range from techniques needed to better acclimate oneself to the culture of an alien, through to general pointers on the types of social etiquette expected of a magisterial agent. Finally, we have the fifth caste, the Ethereals, known to the Tau as the Ahn. It is somewhat difficult to describe them as being equal in status to that of the other castes, since they are distinctly held above all others within Tau society. Nevertheless, they are still considered by the Tau as holding an equitable and amenable position, despite the clear inequalities which we are soon to discuss. This mysterious group are the spiritual leaders of the Tau Empire. Since they first arrived to unite the warring tribes, they have acted as the ultimate rulers of all Tau, directing their species and society into the Empire as it stands today. They preached the importance of unity and first introduced the concept of the greater good, where all Tau should put aside their differences for the betterment of their own unified civilization. Physically, they appear as any other Tau, aside from a distinct diamond-shaped ridge of bone which slightly protrudes from their foreheads. Within this bony protrusion lies a small organ which has been speculated as being the source of a pheromone, which, when released, causes all other Tau to be far more agreeable to the suggestions and directions of an ethereal. This, combined with their revered position within society and the strong social enforcement towards following them, means that almost any request by an ethereal will be obeyed without question. If an ethereal ordered an Earth caste member to abandon a project, they would surely comply. If an air cast member was ordered to make planetfall and live a life in contact with the solid Earth, they would not hesitate to abandon their craft and find a home of rock and stone on the world's surface. Even though a high-ranking watercast diplomat may dictate the policies and plans of a city, they only do so if it falls within the purview of the ethereal's plans. Similarly, any military operation of the Firecast must be vetted and approved by an ethereal who will judge whether or not it will further the spread of the greater good, or if it seems to merely be a fool's errand which will needlessly damn the Tao. Occasionally, an ethereal may be encountered outside of the safety of their cities, where they will join the Firecast warriors on a distant battlefield. Their reasonings for this are somewhat debated, with some claiming that they act as military leaders who are there to inspire and embolden the Tao troops into fighting with increased fervor and tenacity. Alternatively, their presence may be to simply observe the high-ranking Firecast generals as a way of keeping them in line with their directives, for who would dare oppose the will of the ethereals? They are the masters of the eugenics-based caste system, which has become rather synonymous with the Tao way of life. It is clear that they have selectively influenced the evolutionary path of the Tao by implementing such strict and stringent social barriers between different caste members intermarrying, and they have only done this to further their own aspirations for their star-spanning empire. They have sought to produce a system in which each Tao will be completely adapted and fit for the job which they have been assigned. And thanks to this system, any who have been born into their caste will have also inherited the most beneficial traits towards their societal role. Furthermore, aside from influencing their jobs, it is impossible to speak of the caste system without mentioning how it has affected the collective psyche of the Tao. Each individual will grow up with the belief that they are but a cog in a machine far larger than themselves, and that they have a specific role to fulfill within their civilization. Some may think of this as quite a utopian way of living. But remember, if one never thinks of themselves as being able to perform another role, then they end up being far easier to influence, control, and dominate. The caste system may have supported the Tao in their expansion throughout the stars, but we must wonder if it was ever necessary to their success, or if it simply enabled the ethereals to wrangle control over the rest of their species. It is incredibly rare for a Tao to speak out against the will of the ethereals. And in the past, it has only led to that individual being outcast and shunned by the ruling class. Nevertheless, for the Tao, they are content with their current situation. They follow the directives and orders of the ethereals, and to their credit, it has certainly led to them standing as galactic contenders within the vast expanse of our stars. This brings us to the end of our study. It is worth noting that the caste system is only applicable to the Tao themselves. All other Xeno species who live within and contribute to the betterment of the Empire fall outside of its rule set. The Kroot, for example, will live in tribes known as kindreds, which can be seen as something similar to an extended family. The kindreds will each be led by a shaper, who has a stronger knowledge in the art of genetic subsumation through feeding, and so he will lead and teach his kin on which species to consume to gain the most beneficial adaptations. The familial structure of the insectoid vespid species is slightly more unknown to us. From what we have observed, the warrior vespid, known as stingwings, will be organized into small groups called strains. We believe that these strains are led by what we assume to be a senior vespid, who has been granted with a special communion helm by their Tau compatriots. This helmet has been touted as a technological marvel which allows the insectoids to communicate with the rest of the Tau. However, its mechanism of action is still not widely known. What we do understand, however, is that the intricacies of this helmet were discovered by the ethereals themselves, and it is said that even the finest of Earth-cast scientists were unfamiliar with its true workings. Because of this, some believe that the device simply acts as a mind-control beacon to bring the Vespid into submission, since not even the advanced watercast linguistic experts could decipher the complex language of the insectoids. Truly, it seems that none but the most high-ranking of ethereals will ever know whether or not these creatures are actually loyal to the Tau, or if their minds are simply shackled into obedience by the circuitous helms. Human populations within the Tau Empire are known as Guevesa, and they have integrated themselves well within society, but are kept distinctly separate from the caste system. Whilst they may live side by side with the Tau, the water caste administrators are always subtly discouraging them from following the teachings of the Imperium, and will continuously try to indoctrinate newly born humans into adhering to the ways of the greater good. Within the Tau Empire, all castes are seen as being of equal value towards building a new society which can afford a high standard of living to every individual. Even the lowest of Earth caste members are just as important to the growth of the Empire as that of the highest ranking ethereal, and all will bring glory to each other through the teachings of the greater good.